Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Labonte.
And we're here live. I'm in the studio, thanks to the magic of Raven Radio. And thanks to the magic of the interwebs, Kitty Labonte is with me. However, she is...
at home, looking at the window.
Nice. This is the call-in version of The Garden Show. Our topic this morning that we have planned to share information with you and our experiences is all about weeds and weed suppression. There might be a comment or two on weed eating, but weed suppression is what we're mainly going to talk about. And this isn't marijuana. It's not a show about marijuana. Somebody asked me if we were going to do a doubleheader, weed and weed. And while that's entertaining, I don't have a lot of experience of growing weed, the marijuana variety. So we would need to get somebody in who actually has some experience. We like to talk about what's actually happening locally, and so, you know, that would be the key. So, Kitty, 747-5877 is the number. You know that number, and if you're listening, you're welcome to call that number. Becky's here to take your call. She'll answer and send you in to us. If you don't want to talk live on the air, that is no problem. She'll take down your question, and we'll do our best to answer it as well. But weed and weed suppression and... I'll just start out by saying the number one value in weed suppression is prevention.
Yes, prevention is definitely key. The first thing I actually wanted to start with, and this may sound kind of depressing, is that despite all your best efforts and you're following all the suggestions Molly and I are making and other suggestions you might read, you will not really be done weeding as long as you're gardening. I'm sorry to say that to you. It's the truth. What you're going to do is you're going to minimize the time that you spend weeding. But you don't imagine, I mean, I guess you could imagine, that you will really ever be done weeding. So sorry. I'm going to put that out there right now.
So Kitty and I were talking on this topic, and she noted that, you know, do you ever stop brushing your teeth? No, you brush your teeth every day for the rest of your life. So unfortunately, weeding and brushing your teeth, think about those together.
So let's think about some things you can do about stuff. But I think the first way to organize this is, one, it's really important to kind of know what kind of weed you're dealing with.
Kitty, I'm going to interrupt you because we have a caller.
Cool.
All right. Hello, you're on The Garden Show. No, we don't have a caller. So go ahead.
So know what weed you're looking at. That's important because weeds kind of fall into two main categories of reproduction. And reproduction is what you're trying to stop with these weeds. So you have weeds that are going to reproduce by seeds. And you're going to have weeds that are going to reproduce by underground stems. Those are the two main paths. And so control depends on how those weeds are going to reproduce. And I have to tell you that the ones that reproduce by seed are the easiest to control.
Right. So if you have weeds and that are out of control, like more than you feel like you can be on top of, and I'll tell you that's the situation in my garden, my yard. I do lots of weeding, and I actually don't mind it, but they're ahead of me. But the concentrated effort is on the ones that are just about to seed, because that's the ones you want to get ahead of. So if you see it just about to go into bloom, that's the time to take care of it for sure.
So some of the weeds that reproduce by seeds that you can control in your garden are some of the little cresses. They're cardamines. You might call them bittercress. They're small little members of the crucifer family. So they have four petals. They're pretty small flowers and plants. They have these actually kind of cool looking basal rosettes or groups of leaves. And those are reproducing by seeds. And those, you just, like Molly said, you want to make sure they don't actually go to seed in your garden, because then they spread more. Another example is dandelions. Dandelions, yeah, reproduce by seed like mad, and those seeds move everywhere.
All right. So we're going to try again, see if our caller made it in through the technical challenges. Hi, you're on The Garden Show.
Hi, Molly. This is Kathy. Hi, Kitty.
Hi.
Hi. I have a patch in front of our yard that's a fairly narrow it used to be grass, but it's sort of more grass, moss, dandelion. We're kind of done with mowing it and dealing with it. How would I turn that into more? We do walk through there, but it's fairly narrow, maybe 6 feet, and then in front of the whole house. So just trying to get rid of the grass, moss, dandelion and turn it into more of a path or, I don't know, something other than what it is.
So is the goal mainly just to remove vegetation? Is in the end you just want it to be a path?
Yeah.
Well, that's a little like weeds in general. Know that you're never going to be quite done. You'll always have to weed it unless you pave it.
Are a couple of tricks. So you can take the trouble of like removing that upper layer of sod, essentially rolling it up and getting rid of it. And something I've done in the paths in my yard is I break apart cardboard boxes and I lay those down, and then I lay weed cloth down, and then I cover it with small rock. So I'm essentially paving it, but I'm creating this big barrier. So that's one way I know that actually works pretty well. You might get some weeds in from the side, but then, you know, it's a smaller area that they're getting in. But having that kind of triple layer of material seems to have slowed things down. I'm not saying it's stopping them 100%, but that has been pretty helpful for me.
The other thing that I did was dig out a pathway. I put recycled glass down. It's pretty small. It's not big. And then I used old brick. And I still have to weed it, but it's definitely less surface area for seeds to germinate in. It's kind of cute, too.
It sounds cute. You had a question about the weed cloth?
Yeah, where would I get weed cloth?
I think I've grabbed it from either hardware store, and I think all the hardware stores and the nursery carry it. It's just a black kind of, it's not really cloth. That's part of its name. It feels more like a paper. And it usually comes in pretty big rolls. And I think there's a couple of different width options, and you might have to, you know, use two, you know, overlapping layers to get a really wide area. But I really liked that method.
I have one caution about the landscape cloth or the weed barrier cloth. And that's to know, I think it's good. It's effective. It's fine. Just know that in our climate, you're going to have weeds growing on top of it pretty soon. Like, not the same year, but I mean, it's not a permanent they're gone, because what happens we have enough blowing dirt and seeds, and all of a sudden you're just going to be weeding again. But it's a great place to start, like if you have got a significant amount of seed you're trying to eliminate from your path at the beginning.
Yeah, having the rock in there actually really helps. And again, it just slows it down, right? It makes it manageable. If I didn't pull anything out of it for the next 10 years, it would be the same weed patch that it was when I started. But it does slow things down and make them more manageable.
Thank you.
All right. So great to hear from you. Good luck.
Yeah, I've done that with all the paths between my beds. And part of the reason why, and this is kind of twirling around a little bit, but one of the things you want to avoid is having bare soil that essentially serves as a seed bank for weeds and a nice place to grow for, you know, those rhizomatous sort of weedy things. So that's one way to reduce the bare soil that's available for seeds to blow in and land on, is by creating those paths in the garden themselves. You can add mulch.
All right, Kitty, we've got another caller. Hello, you're on the Garden Show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're loving it. Thanks for calling. What's your topic?
Well, things that are weeds in my yard, which might not be in other people's, but Sitka roses are a pain, and then salmon berries, of course, and horsetail and buttercups and grass. And I think the last call was maybe about grass, right?
Certainly had some grass elements, yep.
Okay, well, I heard that part then, so dig up sod. But Sitka roses, you know, you cut them off and they just sprout more and grow. And I guess the only solution is digging the whole root system out, clear back to the mother plant.
So I battle Sitka roses, and I enjoy them, and then I'm totally aware of what you're talking about. And what I recommend to people is choose where you plant them, and if you can plant them with lawn next to them, that's kind of a nice way to go because your lawnmower will just keep those sprouts that are coming, the underground stems that are coming out into the yard, the lawnmower will just take those down. You're not really effectively removing them forever, but you're just sort of suppressing them. But yeah, they are, as Kitty said, the ones that grow with underground stems or underground roots, and the roses are certainly in that category. I think some people think if you don't cut them back, they tend to do that less. You know, they put their energy into growing up, but I'm not convinced.
I'm totally not convinced of that. I think, and I got asked this question the other day, is like, how can I control them? And there's not a way to stop that plant from behaving, you know, according to its biological imperative. So it's going to keep producing rhizomes. And so siting it in a place where you can be happy with that, or just, you know, cut them back as they do it, is really the only way to deal with them. But a lot of the things you mentioned, and I should have written down a list, are things that have these underground stems. And they are, in fact, the beasts. And the salmonberry, how I've tried to deal with it is actually to get back all the way to the root system, you know, to get as much of that root system out of that area as possible. And it's a chore. But that's what I've done. And I just keep cutting at them. When they escape that, because it doesn't matter how much mulch you put over an area, those types of plants are going to come right through that mulch.
Yeah, that's been my experience for the last 20 years. So I guess.
Yep.
I gotta live with
it. Megan, your list is the classic list, and every one of those are the ones that the little bit of root left in the ground is going to repeat into growing another plant. And so, yeah. You know, it's just, it's like brushing your teeth. You just got to keep at it all of the time.
Okay. Well, I can do that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I wish there was a better way. I mean, it's pretty easy, I think, to eliminate most of the seed producing weeds. I mean, you're not going to get rid of all of them, but those are pretty easy to get under control merely by reducing that seed bank and getting rid of open soil. The rhizome ones, I think you just have to stay on it. And if you can dig out like a whole thing, like I've excavated a few salmonberries, that's really helpful. I did manage to get rid of horsetail in my yard. I had a small infestation and kept on that like a, you know, a fiend. And that's gone now. I should like be careful saying things like that. But you can get rid of things if you stay on them.
Yeah, it's just watching for every single time you see that plant coming back. You have to pull it. Horsetails, I burn those or the trash. Don't put those in your compost. And probably the same with any number of other weeds. You know, if you've got a burn going, that's a great way to deal with, especially pieces of root. We had a question from Ted that kind of fits in here, too, who said, can you compost your weeds? Is that okay? Or is there a way? And I do compost a lot of weeds, but here's the thing. Your compost has to be hot enough. So if you're doing a really passive composting job where you're just sort of waiting for things to decay and they're not necessarily cooking, and by hot I mean the temperature inside your compost pile is warm to the touch, or on a really cold day if you turn it and you can see a little steam coming off, that's actually composting. And you can get away with putting weeds in a hot compost. I still wouldn't put horsetail in a hot compost. I don't know why.
I'm like twitching.
I know. Those things are just amazing, and every little bit of them. And so, but a small amount, yes. Less likely, you know, will your compost be hot enough to deal with the seed? I don't know for sure. And the other problem is some of these weeds, you pull them with buds on the plant, they finish developing their seed after you've pulled them out of the ground. It's amazing how persistent they are.
They're
so you have to be a little careful about composting, but you can get away with it if your compost is hot enough.
I tend not to put, like, any weeds in my compost unless they are those seed-producing weeds that don't even have flowers. Those I'll put in there. I'll put in some of the grasses. But the buttercup, which is one that I kill, I throw into the fire. I mean, that doesn't go anywhere near my compost. It makes me nervous just looking at it.
Yeah. So, Megan, you had another thought about this weed issues.
Well, this wasn't about weeds.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm a lazy gardener, but this is about, I have one rhodia. I have several in the yard, but one of them develops buds nicely all the time, and then it comes time to bloom, and about a quarter of them bloom, and the rest all turn brown, and I try to go snap them off, you know, because they're not going to do anything, but it just keeps doing the same thing every year, and it does get drained. It's where by my entry sorta, and if I do use ice melter, it kind of drains down right where that little roadie is. So is that probably the problem?
Hmm.
Do the buds turn black or brown?
Yeah, they don't go anywhere.
You know, one thing would be to try a series of things and see if you can figure it out. And I'm wondering if it's water, actually. So, you know, your rhododendron bulbs are going to set, I mean, buds, not bulbs, buds are going to set midsummer to late summer. When we in Sitka have a pretty rainy season, it's possible that the drier month of May and June, when they actually bloom, then there's not enough water. And if it's especially in a place that's well drained, so you might try watering a little bit more than you would think you need to on the in this earlier summer time, right when the buds are happening. It might not be that, but you know, that's an easy one to try and see if you could improve it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Yeah, no, I would also, there's some really, really good websites about rhododendron issues that are pretty legit, because rhododendrons are such a big horticultural plant, you know, throughout a lot of the United States. I would check out some of those good rhododendron, you know, kind of pest and problem websites as well.
Yeah, I feed them all. They all get fed this time.
You can overfeed them.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not using a measuring cup.
Ew, use a measuring cup, Megan.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call. 747-5877 is the number. We're talking about weeds this morning, and I wanted to get to, you know, we've mentioned Megan helped us quite a bit, and she listed out kind of the classics, and we've talked about that it's seed or root, or both in some cases, like dandelions. But there are some other things to do, and I want to have a quick note about herbicides. So classically, the solution to weeds is to use herbicides, which are essentially poisons. And there's different ones that have been developed to try and tackle the weeds, but not your lawn, for example. That seems to be the main, you know, you've heard of Weed and Feed. And I would just like to say I discourage you from using any of the chemical herbicides. There are consequences to them that are hard to be clear about after you've applied them to your lawn or garden. They're not good for birds, animals, or children. And in our part of the climate, in our part of the world, you think about it, all of them drain pretty quickly into groundwater and right down into our ocean. So I'm down on herbicides as a whole. We, for many years, believed that Roundup was pretty benign and it was fine to use Roundup. Increasingly, we're seeing the research saying it's not really so benign. So if you can get away without it, I think that I really want to encourage you. And there are a few other things that you can use if you're frustrated or if you're someone who is not going to be down there pulling out those roots. And they include things like boiling water, vinegar, and using a flamethrower, essentially. I mean, if you have someone in your family who really likes fire and you're trying to eliminate weeds from an area that is a whole scale area to eliminate weeds, that's a solution too.
So, yeah, and that works best where you're not going to kill other plants. So flame throwing actually, I think, works really well on, like, edges of paths and things like that, where you mostly have gravels and things like that. So the thing to remember about vinegar and boiling water is that will kill the top of a plant, but it won't necessarily kill the roots. So, you know, it's a short term sort of thing. I tested it on some salmon berries and, you know, it got rid of a few things, but it didn't, you know, get rid of the stems that were coming off of the rest of it. So it felt like kind of it was like as much work to spray the bottle as it was to pull out a few things. So I just as soon pull them out and cut them. And again, you know, try to do some prevention. You know, don't leave soil bare out there. Use mulch, use a cover crop, cover your paths. Do, you know, and also, by the way, cover your compost for two reasons. One, it keeps the excess rain out, which does happen here. And also, it keeps seeds from blowing in on it.
So it looks like we have another call coming in, but, you know, we're tossing around this idea of flamethrower. What we mean is like a propane burner nozzle. So that's what we're talking about in terms of calling it a flamethrower.
Yeah, you could use hairspray and a lighter, I guess, but that would be way too entertaining.
Yeah. Hello, you're on The Garden Show.
Hey, so I have a question and something I have learned that is valuable. The thing I've learned that's valuable is that the creeping buttercup, if you wait until it's starting to put out the, you know, its spurs when it's trying to reach out and grab more property, it must put a lot of energy into that because it's so much easier to pull than any other time of the year. So that's when I started pulling my my creeping buttercup. But I've heard this idea that taking out, like you've talked about the weed block, someone suggested to me as a weed block that I go out to my dandelions, leave them there, but take off all the flowers. Wondering what you think of this idea of, you know, trying to fight fire with weeds.
Right. So go ahead, Katie.
I was just a little bit, so when you're talking about removing the tops of your dandelions, are you just talking about like deadheading them essentially so they don't spread seed?
Exactly, taking the flowers off.
Yes, that was one thing I was going to suggest to people who maybe you even like the way your dandelions look when they're flowering. I mean, they're kind of bright and pretty, but if you don't want them everywhere, that could be one thing to do. It's just cut off their flowering heads. It won't kill them by any stretch of the imagination, and they'll continue to do fine and form a giant mat, but they won't spread by seed.
I think the challenge is, for me, would be, did I really catch them all? And the minute you turn them back, they'll all flower. So, you know, we have a beautiful spring bloom of dandelions. In fact, it's underway right now. But if you took them all off, took all the flowers off, they would still keep trying. So that's one downside. But it certainly would be a good solution to not sending a lot of seed into your neighbor's yard. And typically that's one of the problems with dandelions is, even if you don't mind, so often people who are trying to grow a lawn mind a lot. So it could be a really thoughtful way if you don't mind having the mat of greenery. Is that working for you, Michelle?
It seems to be at least, it's doing something. I mean, like you said, that I have a gravel yard that when we first got here, they must have done something to get rid of all the weeds, because I'm like, perfect, I just want that gravel yard. I even have, you know, a Japanese garden that goes with it. But raking is another thing that if your gravel is loose enough, that's a good way to get rid of, you know, to get rid of seeds, or at least stop them from growing so that they turn into more seeds.
Right. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, I have noticed that the the buttercups do start producing those, essentially they seem like above ground stems, so like more like stolons, and they are definitely easier to grab hold of then. But I basically, my strategy with those beasts is like I get rid of them as soon as I see them. I know there will be more for me to get rid of later on in the season that I've missed. But yeah, I just keep trying. I just keep working at them. I accidentally brought those into my yard when I brought in some soil. And so that's like a cautionary statement. So when I bring in soil now, or I bring in plants from friends, actually for almost anyone, I put them in pots first and essentially sequester that soil and sequester those plants until I see what comes up out of them. No one means to give you these weeds, but it happens. So yeah, I try to keep them separate from the main beds.
So I live right in town. I've got lots of weeds, so I'm not doing a lot of sequestering. There's a few places, few things that are sources of weeds. Birds bring weed seeds in. The wind brings weed seeds. Obviously, as Kitty said, other soil, other plants, those all bring weed seeds in. A big source of weed seed that sometimes people don't realize are the commercial fertilizers that are organic. So steer manure and chicken manure, those bag manures sometimes have quite a bit of seed in, and I find the chicken manure has more weed seed than any.
Yeah, I actually didn't get any of that. I think I just got tired of carrying it home because it was heavy. I'm trying this pelleted manure instead to see how that works. And I imagine that has much, because of the whole treatment, that probably has much fewer seeds in it. So we'll see. I'll have to report on how successful that is at some point.
Right. So thinking about your vegetable bed, you suddenly have this beautifully prepared body of soil and you're waiting for seeds to germinate and you're not exactly sure what they look like. And so suddenly you've got all these seeds germinating. One of the things to prevent, one, if you can learn what your seeds that you're expecting to grow look like, that will be a big help. So if you can track on that early on and you know, oh, this is a carrot seed, this is a seed of a lettuce, this is a seed of one of my brassicas, and these other things are actually the seed of dandelions and the seed of the creeping buttercup. If you can learn to identify those seedlings, that will really help you, and you can take them out when they're tiny. Then the other thing is plant your seeds and cover the rest of your bed with bits of cardboard or wood chips or something to eliminate that extra bare soil. The key for your prepared beds is you want it to be something fairly compostable, so that, you know, when it just melts down into your garden, you're fine. If it's something plastic or something like that, then you have to deal with taking it up and getting rid of it. But, you know, you can sort of build soil and suppress weeds at the same time with cardboard around larger transplants or rows of seeds, wood chips that are well composted, anything like that.
Yeah, I like to use, I can get seaweed most times of the year, and so I try to use as much of that as possible, and I don't need a very thick layer around my garden beds, or in my vegetable beds. That seems to work just fine, just having kind of a light layer, and anything that germinates, you know, I can easily also remove, because I know what my seedlings look like. I just go in and just do spot removal, or I'll take this little hand hoe that I have and just kind of mix up the soil, and that might bring new weed seeds to the surface that will germinate, and I can knock those out also as soon as they start to germinate. I just don't let them get to flowering. That's the key.
So we have a question coming in, but I just wanted to note that a lot of people like the idea of rototilling, and rototilling is great unless you have a lot of weeds growing in the area you're going to rototill. So if you have a garden bed with horsetail or creeping buttercup and you rototill, guess what? You have made a million more individual plants, because every bit that you break up with your rototiller is going to give you another plant. We're just out of time, but we do have a question. So the caller says, do Indian potatoes need to be cut and dried before planting? and they're just getting ready to plant. So I'm delighted to answer this question. They don't need to be cut and dried. If you cut them, they need to be dried. But you could plant the little potatoes whole as they are. If you're trying to expand the number of plants you have, then cut them up. Make sure there's an eye. That little sprout is called an eye on a seed potato on each piece, and dry them for at least 24 to 48 hours before you plant them.
Yep, that seems to work really well. I like to plant most of my potatoes whole if possible. I try to pick the right size, but that's just personal choice. It works just as well cutting, getting that skin to develop and plant them. So either way works.
Guess what? We're out of time. The Garden Show flew by. Thanks so much for your calls this morning. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Thanks, Kitty, for The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty. Thanks for listening and calling.
KCAW Sitka.